Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
Excited to have our next guest on the show. You may know her. You may remember her as a Portland native. Had a great history with the sport of golf. Certainly a history at the University of Oregon as an administrator and women's golf coach, senior associate AD. Now at Santa Clara, where the Broncos are, like everybody else, trying to get through this coronavirus pandemic and get students back on campus and get athletics going again. We've been talking to a lot of ADs this week. We had Scott Barnes, Oregon State's AD, on yesterday. Pat Chun, the AD at Washington State, was on earlier in the week. Renee Baumgartner joining us, Santa Clara University Athletic Director. What's the scene there? Are you at home or are you on campus today?
Well, good afternoon, John. I am actually at home. Our campus is open, but only essential workers are allowed to go in, and so if we need to grab and go. So I haven't been in the office in several weeks, which has been very challenging at times.
Is there another time in your career that you can remember, I mean, anything, probably nothing like this? I mean, I'm trying to think of something that I could even bring up, and it's, you know, we just haven't had anything like this. It's surreal, isn't it?
It is surreal. I think this pandemic has hit everybody in so many different ways. I mean, we're concerned about our country. We're concerned about our friends. We're concerned about our families, our livelihoods. And, you know, you've developed relationships with people, and now all of a sudden we're in a, you know, stay at home and 6 feet apart, and you don't get to reach out and touch people. And I'm a person that thrives off of other people's energy. And so I think that's been probably one of the most challenging things for me is, you know, being on many Zoom calls for many hours a day and then not being able to sit in front of people and talk to them about, you know, what they're doing, what they're excited about, and feeding off their energy.
Renee Baumgartner with us, Santa Clara's athletics director. Can you kind of take us through where you were when this all broke? And did you immediately know this is going to be really bad for college athletics, or did it just sort of unfold as dominoes begin to fall?
You know, I remember explicitly we had just gotten back from the West Coast Conference basketball tournament. And fortunately for us, we have a tremendous leadership at Santa Clara University, and our administration was on it. I mean, we prepared. We knew that California was probably at high risk. We were planning for the future. And I just thought to myself, when I have to stand up in front of those teams and tell them that they're no longer able to participate in their sports, it would be a very, very hard day. And I'll never forget that day because, as you know, student athletes and coaches work really hard. They're at the pinnacle of their spring. They're looking forward to competing, and all of a sudden, you know, that dream has been taken away. So I'll never forget that day, and I appreciate what Santa Clara did. They were able to get individuals off campus and get people shelter in place and to really worry about the health of this community.
You know, there's a lot of people out there, and I know I had a hard time when this first was breaking. I was calling my parents. My parents were at a youth soccer game, and I was like, you need to go home. You should not be out. Like, what are you doing? And my mom, you know, my mom's a nurse, and I was like, how do you not do this? And eventually, a couple of days later, she was like, oh, okay, I get it. I'm home. I'm home now. What was the reaction of athletes? Because you're around young people all the time, and I think there was sort of an air of invincibility in some young people. How did the athletes at Santa Clara react when you were sort of breaking the news to them?
You know, I was really proud of our student athletes. Of course, there were tears. I had tears. It was very challenging. But they're resilient. You know, they knew that this was going to be a crisis. They felt it coming along. They wanted to get home and protect their family and be with them and their friends and make sure that, you know, they're all safe. So I felt like at the time that they understood, you know, Santa Clara develops leaders. And I really believe that one day when they're having a crisis and facing it as adults, they'll reflect back on this and be really proud of how they handled the situation.
Let's go back to your childhood. You grew up in a family of five. Sports is at the center of your family. What did you play as a kid, and how did it shape sort of what you became as a professional?
Well, I grew up in an incredible neighborhood, two blocks from Grant Park. And so we had amazing families, lots of kids around. We played kickball, you name it, kick the can. I think it helped us all develop as leaders. I think in high school, I played four sports. I was able to play volleyball, basketball, skied. And of course, I fell in love with chasing a little white ball around.
Yep.
But, you know, back in the day, we got to go outside, ride our bikes. Parents didn't worry, and really had an incredible childhood. I was so blessed to be part of an incredible neighborhood and have a family that was incredibly competitive, because I think it just made us all better.
Yeah, let's go to that point, because I've got three girls, right? And they are in constant competition with each other. And I tell my wife, I say, this is going to make them better. It's going to make them better. Let's go back to the Mack household growing up. You've got your sister who became a stud golfer. You guys had golf at the center. How did that competition with the siblings manifest itself on a daily basis?
Well, it originated from my father. He was a very successful amateur golfer, and he'd take my brother out at a young age, and rumor has it I would throw a temper tantrum if I wasn't able to go out. So I think they said, Uncle, okay, take Renee with us. And I literally would drag my sisters out with me because I wanted companionship. And so it became a family affair. My mom would drop us off when we were teenagers. We'd be at the golf course from 8 to 8 o'clock at night. We had incredible families that, you know, many of them went on to be Division I golfers. And, you know, looking back, I wouldn't want to change my childhood in any sort of way. And we were very fortunate to have each other to compete hard. And, you know, I appreciate that my parents really valued education, but they also said, hey, we all played instruments. You know, we were all in dance, at least the girls. And if you're going to play a sport, make sure you put 100% effort in and you do your best. And that's all we can ask. And so I think it just made us all better. And yes, your three girls, they will fight. They will have different personalities. Some might be, you know, competitively, outwardly competitive. Some might be inwardly. But it will just be priceless when they look back, having each other and having that opportunity to, you know, cherish these moments, especially even if it's in competition.
Santa Clara Athletic Director Renee Baumgartner, our guest. You spent time at Syracuse, where basketball is big. You spent time at Oregon, 17 years at the University of Oregon. You were coaching there, and you were an associate AD there. So you've seen sort of the spectrum. You're now in a conference where, you know, you don't have that revenue stream from football. How is it different for you currently at Santa Clara, maybe than the Power Five schools that are all focused on college football right now?
Yeah, I don't think there's a lot of difference in it. I mean, we're all really just concerned about getting back to whatever the new norm is going to look like. And obviously, you know, people at my pay grade aren't going to be making those choices, but the local health authorities will be doing that. And my hope is that we can come back in the fall and have some normalcy with, you know, student athletes being able to play the sports that they love. But, you know, we're just going to have to wait and see. We know that May 3rd in California, we're hoping our governor gives us some new direction on what it will look like in the future. And, you know, we're just preparing ourselves for a variety of options. You know, maybe we're playing in the regular fall schedule. Maybe we have to shift it a bit. But my hope is that we can get back and give an opportunity for our student athletes to compete at the highest level. And we're very fortunate, Santa Clara. We have a president that's incredibly aligned. Obviously, I'm aligned. We have three, you know, very generous donors that are billionaires that we're going to build a $38 million facility that will be done in about 5 months. And it's going to be a game changer for us. And I'm looking forward to, you know, having Santa Clara compete at the highest level.
I think, you know, it's interesting because I look a lot at the University of Portland and I hear over and over, you know, we want to be Gonzaga in basketball. And you hear that, but there's only one Gonzaga. So at Santa Clara, how do you position yourself? Like when you walk in the door there, what do you say? Hey, we've got an angle here or an angle there. Let's be this kind of athletic department. Are you able to to paint with a blank canvas, or do you sort of inherit, hey, here's where we've been in the past, here's where we want to go?
You know, John, I was really fortunate to be at Oregon when I believe the magic was happening. We had the visionary leaders with, you know, Phil and Penny Knight, and Dave Frommeyer and Pat Kilkenny. They were all aligned. And so to see that alignment and to see the vision that they put out and planted seeds for really the success of at that time and in the future, I have taken that playbook and I'm applying it to Santa Clara University. I walked in, my daughter and I headed down to the weight room at Santa Clara to get on the treadmill, and there was no treadmill. And I think to myself, we're a Division I program 5 years ago and we don't have a treadmill. And in 6 months, we're going to have a underwater treadmill in our brand new facility. So, you know, I'm very fortunate that I've been able to have a canvas that I can paint, that I have the support from our administration and my president and donors. And it's just going to take us some time, like it has done, you know, at any organization to build. But we are slowly but surely building an incredible culture, and we are going to have a chance to compete at the highest level in the very near future.
You mentioned, you know, it's great that you point out the congruency of vision at Oregon, and you were part of that 17 years there. Did, you know, everybody talks about Phil and Penny and Nike when it's Oregon. What do we not know from somebody who was on the inside? How many other moving parts had to come together for Oregon to accelerate the way it did?
Well, obviously, Phil and Penny are essential to Oregon's success, along with a variety of legendary coaches. And I think the biggest thing for success and what I'm trying to apply at Santa Clara is to believe. Even if we didn't believe at a time that we could, we all did. We believed, yeah, we can go play for a national championship in football. When I got there in 1987, you couldn't even pay people to go to the football games. There were less than 5,000 people in the stands. And I look at what Oregon is today and I think to myself, if we didn't believe and we didn't have the proper people in place to believe, then I'm not sure it would have come to fruition and it would have the success that it has today.
Who's the unsung hero in that equation?
You know, there are a lot of unsung heroes in that equation. I can go back to all the legendary football coaches, the people that have worked really hard there, the athletic directors with a lot of sweat and tears. Obviously, I think you're leading me towards my good friend Jim Barco, who, you know, had his fingerprints over a lot of things. But you know, my hat's off to a collective effort of individuals that loved Oregon more than anything in the world, and we're going to roll up their sleeves and do what they can to provide an opportunity for it to be successful when nobody else believed that we could.
Renee Baumgartner is our guest, Santa Clara University Athletic Director. What are you reading right now? What's on your nightstand, or are you a Netflix person outside of work? Where does your mind go?
You know, I have gone back to one of my favorite books, Winning by Jack Welch. I just think it's an amazing book, you know, for so many reasons. It just reminds you of mission and values and things that people should do to really set up a successful program. I have on my nightstand me, Elton John. I love Elton John. I love his music. My husband loves Elton John. I want to get through that book sometime. And I actually, on HBO, got to watch The Women of Troy. And I was at USC when Cheryl Miller and the McGee twins were there. And that was fun to see, go back in time.
I saw Elton John in Vegas maybe year and a half ago. And he was great, played forever. I couldn't believe at his age how long he played. Like the fact that he had the endurance or the stamina to be up there and play every hit after hit after hit for like in a couple hours. I was looking at my watch going, he's still going? Like that's what amazed me.
I'm jealous because I've seen him a few times in larger stadiums, but I just think he's incredible. And I love his story. He was just so true to himself.
Favorite Elton John song?
Oh, Yellow Brick Road. I love that song. I love. Okay. What's your favorite, John?
Oh, I don't know. Your song, probably. Something like that.
Oh, you know, yeah, I like that your song's good. Yeah, I should have actually said that because that was our wedding song. My husband's going to look at me and say, I cannot believe you didn't pick that song.
Well, you tell him.
Trouble.
There you go. That's why I bring you on here. Hey, Renee, I really appreciate you making time, and I know your roots are here in the state of Oregon, and you know the show airs statewide, so you're on in Eugene and Klamath Falls and everywhere, and your history at Oregon is as well. And what do you want people to know? Like, because you know you've gone on, and I think there are a lot of people in the state that have followed you and sort of said, you know, hey, when you're at Syracuse, that was awesome. You're at Syracuse. Now you're at Santa Clara. You're running your thing. And I think there's people excited to see what you do there and what's next for you. But what do you want people who have helped you along the way to know?
You know, Oregon is my home. I am so thankful that I was able to live in Oregon, you know, when I grew up. And one day I'll be back when I'm retired. But I want people to know that there's so many people that impacted my life, that believed in me, knew that I, you know, could branch away and have success. And, you know, when my family and I moved to New York, my kids loved it. They loved the experience. They love the education, and, you know, now we're all back on the West Coast. And I think that, you know, those type of opportunities are priceless for so many reasons. And, you know, I think that, you know, I can't thank people enough for just believing in me and giving me opportunities. And hopefully, you know, I can continue to thrive at Santa Clara and go back and visit my family and friends, because Oregon is my home.
All right. I appreciate you making time for us, Renee. Outstanding stuff. Wish you the best. Stay safe.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on your show, and stay safe with your family. Stay well.
You bet. There's Renee Baumgartner, Santa Clara University's athletic director. You may remember her from Oregon, or you may remember her from your old neighborhood near Grant and Central Catholic High School. Certainly a lot of people that she has come in contact through over the years. My phone's blown up with people who know her and going, I love Renee, love Renee. That's what it is. So she's made a lot of good friends and a lot of good connections. Here's the other thing. I really was resisting during that interview with Renee Baumgartner asking the dumb question. You know what the dumb question is? Because I've asked the dumb question. I'm well-versed in the dumb question. I have on the phone a female athletic director at a Division I university. And I've made the mistake before of asking, you know, hey, you're a woman in athletics, in major college athletics, and we don't see enough women as Division I athletic directors. We just don't. Jen Cohen at the University of Washington, terrific job. Same case. I would be tempted to ask the dumb question if I had Jen Cohen at Washington on this show. I think she's brilliant. I think she's good at what she does. And then there's part of me that would want to be like, you know, as you're getting an MBA, you have a choice to go into the Fortune 500 corporate world and run a company, or you have a choice of going into what has traditionally been a man's world and run a university athletic department. I think we see, even though you see numbers in MBA programs that skew towards more women than men being part of MBA programs, I think, and I have heard women say over the years, hey, look, it's a tough enough world to be in, you know, in an MBA program and striving towards there. But I think that's old thinking. I think that's old thinking. And I think it's why it's a bad question is, I just think we're at a point in the year 2020 where I shouldn't have to ask her, hey, how does it feel to be on this stage as the athletic director, as a woman? Like, I think we're past that. So, but there was part of me that it like entertained that idea, like, hey, I'm talking to a woman who is in a job that I have long advocated for women to be in these kinds of jobs across the country. Do I bring it up? Because what's she going to say? Well, yes, you know, I start up. What it tells me is that somebody in her life very early empowered her. Told her you could be anything you want to do, because we are seeing a wave of women like Valerie Cleary at Portland State, Renee Baumgartner at Santa Clara. We certainly, I mentioned Jen Cohn at Washington. I think you look across and, you know, I look over and I see that UNLV's got Desiree Reed Francois, who's their athletic director. I think you look at, you know, the WCC conference as a whole and you see that, you know, this is a conference that's got a commissioner named Gloria Navarez, who does a terrific job. She's the commissioner of the WCC. She used to be at the Pac-12. I think I'm kind of past asking about it. That's why it's a dumb question, because I don't think it merits an answer anymore. I think Renee Baumgartner is being successful. I think Valerie Cleary is being successful. I think Gloria Navarez is being successful. I think Jen Cohen is being successful, and I'm not asking Rob Mullins or Scott Barnes or Pat Chun, hey, what is it like to be a man as an athletic director at a university? I'm just not asking that question, so why am I asking the women? Leave it here. You got the bald-faced truth statewide. Bill Shonley, the mayor of Rip City, was on this show. He was dubbed the mayor on this show back in the day. I don't even know what year that was. It's a while ago. And he told the story of us going to lunch. And frankly, he told the story of us talking about the radio show before there was a radio show. He left one important thing out of that story. See, the Blazers were really bad. The team was in bankruptcy. They had thrown what was then the Rose Garden Arena into bankruptcy. They were going to win like 21 games. It was dire. And I was struggling in that season in a way that I think you can totally relate as a fan. As a journalist, I was trying to write something positive during a time in which there was nothing positive going on. Like, the Blazers had nothing going on that I could be like, well, at least they got this. So the bottom line was, I called up Bill Shonley, and I decided I was going to write something positive. And I called up Shonley, and I said, can we go have lunch? I just want to write something happy and positive. The team stinks. There's bankruptcy going on. The Blazers had a bunch of bad people running the organization. The general manager, Steve Patterson, was running around doing things that nobody liked. And the employee, a bunch of people got fired. 88 people got fired and laid off. And it was terrible. Just the aura and the culture of the Blazers was broken. So Shonley agrees to have lunch. We meet at Huber's. Do you know what Huber's is? It's the oldest restaurant in Portland. And James Louie and his family now own it and operate it. And it was a restaurant that had survived prohibition by serving turkey sandwiches. And they still, to this day, serve a hell of a turkey sandwich. So it's an old restaurant. And Shonley said, okay, we'll go in. But it's that old kind of restaurant where you walk in and the maitre d' greets you, or the host greets you at the door, and there's a bar area with a wonderful overhead stained glass sort of dome that's up above that natural light comes through, and it's kind of oaky and dark. Have you guys been in there, Alabama, Adriana, Judah? Have you been in Huber's?
I've never been inside of it, but I've seen it like from the street view.
Yeah, I actually remember going as a youngster. I haven't been in the last few years, though.
Okay, so the bottom line is, it's old school Portland, okay? So Shonley meets me there, and you couldn't have lined this up better. When we arrived for lunch, Harry Glickman was having lunch on the other side of the restaurant. Like, you know, here I'm going with Shonley, I'm going to write this column about the original longtime employee of the Blazers, and there's the founding father of the Trailblazers, the other guy on the Mount Rushmore, Harry Glickman, who, by the way, listens to this radio show. Shout out to Harry. The bottom line being that, you know, here's Shonley and me, and we say hi to Glickman. Glickman talks to us, and then we go to the other side of the restaurant, and we slide into this booth that is kind of like, I don't know if you've been in the dining room area, if you're listening, but there's these columns or pillars throughout the restaurant. It's so old school that, you know, there's kind of like a pillar, and then there's booths on the other side of it. So you're hidden, and you're kind of sequestered off from part of the dining room area. And Shonley and I are sitting in there, and he orders a turkey sandwich. I order a turkey sandwich. I remember to this day, he had iced tea. I had water. I know he had iced tea because that iced tea saved his life. I've told this story before. I'm going to tell it again. Shonley arrives. He's got a suit on. He's got a tie on. He looks impeccable. He always looks impeccable. In fact, I imagine he's sitting at home right now during this COVID-19 social distancing, physical distancing era, and he is probably wearing a pressed suit and tie. He's got it all perfect. His hair's and everything. Like, just perfect. That's how Sean Lee is every time you see him. Can't imagine him like sitting around in a robe on a Saturday with his hair like he's got bedhead. I can't imagine that. So Sean Lee looks perfect. He slides into the booth. I slide into my side. I got a notepad. We order, and we begin to talk, and then the food comes. I'm writing a column that is supposed to be positive about the Blazers, Bill Shonley. You know, here's a guy who's going to get us through it, whatever. He takes his first bite of turkey sandwich, and he looks uncomfortable. And I realize pretty quickly he's choking. And I think to myself, oh my gosh, I'm going to kill Bill Shonley. This is it. This is how he goes. You know, here it is. He's probably like late 70s, early 80s at that time. He's 90 now. And Sean Lee's looking at me with that panicked look like, oh, crap, I'm in trouble. And he's trying to take he takes a sip of his iced tea, like maybe because, you know, you eat a turkey sandwich. You guys know you get like a piece of the breast meat or whatever. Sometimes it can be dry or whatever. And you try to swallow and you get a little. Well, Sean Lee was choking. So I started to move towards him instinctively because I'm going to have to do the Heimlich maneuver on Bill Shonley. I'm going to have to save his life. But Shonley slides out of the booth himself, and he kind of disappears behind the column. It was almost like the part of Bill Shonley that was being interviewed that knows media was horrified by the idea that he was going to choke in front of a journalist and that this was going to end up being the story that I retold later. He disappeared behind the column. I don't know what he did back there. I don't know if he threw his body over a chair like you see in the movies. I don't know if Harry Glickman could have done the Heimlich maneuver on him. I don't know what happened. But when he came around the other side of the column, like, you know, by the time I kind of went, like, which way did he go? And I came around. By the time I saw him again, Bill Shonley had dislodged the turkey sandwich from his throat, and he looked perfect. He was straightening his tie. He took a sip of his iced tea when he got back to the table, and I said, I thought I was going to kill you there. This was supposed to be a happy day. This was supposed to be a good column. But that is the story of the day that Bill Shonley nearly died. Punch It Audio is coming up. We got the best sound from all around. I got great audio coming up. I want you to leave it here for that. Also, I'm going to put a call out to you. A little bit later in the show.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald-Faced
Truth. Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald-Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.